And welcome to Industry Group, your podcast source for analysis of the inside trends and goings-on in the entertainment industry.
On today's episode, we're talking feet, firearms, and fulsome amounts of blood and gore.
That's right, it's Quentin Tarantino's ninth movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
If this loving look at a Los Angeles of old isn't Quentin Tarantino's greatest film, it's certainly his most Oscar-worthy. So, this is a movie I've been looking forward to for a while. I read about 2 years back about a tentative Manson family movie directed by Quentin Tarantino, and that did not excite me incredibly because I was just thinking it didn't really sound interesting for Quentin Tarantino, the guy known for violence and blood and gore, to be telling a story that's known for violence and blood and gore. But when they started marketing this movie widely and I saw the trailer, I was really intrigued by the sunny imagery and the old music and the crackly image quality, and also the fact that they were telling this story that history really only tells, you know, one way, from a totally different lens, even if it was a fictional one. And I thought that was maybe even better. So I had considerably high expectations for this movie.
I honestly had no expectations for this movie whatsoever. I've never seen a Tarantino film before, and I didn't even know we were going to see the movie until that's what we bought tickets for at the movie theater.
We fly by the seat of our pants here on Industry Herb. There are some really fantastic things about this movie, things I love. There are also some things that some people will consider to be a bit lukewarm, cinematically speaking. One really, really amazing thing is the way Quentin Tarantino's love for Los Angeles comes out in the cinematography of this movie.
Yeah, definitely. At some parts, I was kind of reminded of how Damien Chazelle shot scenes in La La Land.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Even though it feels really, really weird to be even, like, using Quentin Tarantino and Damien Chazelle in the same sentence because they're, like, on polar opposites of the director spectrum. But, yeah, I can see that. There's parts of this where there's just, you know, these sunsets that are just, like, kind of breathtaking.
Yeah, sometimes the L.A. scenery and sunsets in the movie look almost artificial, just like how in certain scenes in La La Land, like What a Waste of a Lovely Night, look like a backdrop, kind of, but really it's just the natural lighting of Los Angeles in the evening.
It's like a perpetual golden hour glow over everything. And the nighttime scenes, there's this, like, really lucid, ethereal quality to them that is almost, I don't even, like, soothing or refreshing, even though the scenes are often depicting some really horrible peril. It's like something really bad is about to happen, but the weather's nice, you know? I also think, you know, running with the Damien Chazelle comparison, because why not? We already let that cat out of the bag. Both directors seem to look at this famous town or city as a place of opportunity. They both wax cynical about the social tendencies of the city, the greed, the greedy executives and desperate actors that will do anything to climb up the ladder and make some money. But beneath that crust, there is a golden heart to this place. And Quentin Tarantino captures that a lot. The way that our characters are, you know, passionately trying to make it in their craft despite all of the pitfalls and setbacks. I can tell that Tarantino sees this as a really inspirational place. It's also really cool, and you can let me know your opinion about this, Lainey, to see Leonardo DiCaprio, who is known as one of the greatest actors of our generation, have to act as an actor and do little bit parts within his own character. There's, if you remember the Western sequence, that's, it's very drawn out with Timothy Oliphant, where they're filming a TV Western, and he's doing a role that he's not really comfortable with. He's used to being the hero, and now he's the villain, and you can see as they're filming it, and the camera angles we see are the camera angles that the crew members are using. You can see his uncertainty and his, at the beginning, sense of being uncomfortable in that role, and as he goes throughout the scene, he gets stronger in it, and he owns it more and more throughout that part of the movie. There's also some interesting uses of frame narrative, which is something Tarantino is known for. And if you don't know what frame narrative is, it's what it sounds like. A little story within a story. The lazy English teacher example that gets used a lot is Frankenstein, where in the middle of the story, someone stops and tells another story that may or may not serve the narrative. But there's the Bruce Lee sequence, I think we'll call it. So I'll call it the Bruce Lee sequence. It's not his real name, of course, but this is one of the funniest parts in the movie. And before I tell you this story about what happens in the movie, you should stop listening if you've not seen this part before, because you deserve to see it unspoiled. Words cannot give justice to how absolutely hysterical this scene is. It's so funny. So basically, if you've seen the trailer, you know Brad Pitt plays Leonardo DiCaprio's character's stunt double in this movie. The new show that Leonardo DiCaprio, Rick Dalton, is working on doesn't have any work for Brad Pitt. So he's sitting at home lamenting the fact that he does not have any work at the studio to do that day. And then the scene changes, and we see him at the studio a lot. He's talking to the director, who is played by Kurt Russell. It's pretty funny. And then the director's talking to Rick Dalton, and he confides the fact that he does not like Brad Pitt. He suspects him of killing his wife and getting away with it. But he reluctantly agrees to give him something to do. Some, you know, playing an extra or something. I don't remember what it was. He has some work on the lot. So Brad Pitt's sitting there. They're on a break or something. And Bruce Lee is there. This fictionalized Bruce Lee is talking about his physical prowess and his mastery of combat. The fact that he could beat Muhammad Ali in a fight if it need be. And Brad Pitt thinks this is kind of funny, so he laughs. And Bruce Lee, of course, asks him what he's laughing at, and it becomes a whole altercation, and basically it gets to the point where Brad Pitt's about to fight this fictional Bruce Lee. So Bruce Lee knocks him down, and he gets back up, and he goes, "Try that again." And Bruce Lee does, and Brad Pitt throws him into a car, denting it, and knocking Bruce Lee down. I'm laughing about it now. It's so funny. And then, you know, so the director's wife comes in, and she starts screaming at him, tells him, "Get off the lot. You're not welcome here anymore. Don't ever come back." And then it flashes back to Brad Pitt still being at home, and you realize this entire thing has just been a theoretical thought process in his head. He's thinking, "I should really go get some work at the studio. My best friend will come through for me. But if I do, Bruce Lee will probably be there. And of course, if Bruce Lee is there, I'm going to get in a fight with him." And the problem with that would be, I would win and beat Bruce Lee in a fight so badly that I'm not welcome in Hollywood ever again.
Yeah, that scene was incredibly funny, especially because being in the theater, you get to witness people getting the joke at different times. Like, for me, I didn't even realize that it wasn't really happening until the punchline.
Yeah, it was one of those, like, slow burners where everyone, a couple people in the theater chuckled, and then a few more people laughed, and it just kind of, like, was this eruption of laughter. And it was fun to be in a large public setting for that. There's also the part where Tarantino makes you think he's going into another frame narrative segment where Brad Pitt comes home and he says, "I bought an acid cigarette today," and then it flashes back and it's just him sitting in a car, and a girl, some hippie, comes up to him and says, "You want to buy an acid cigarette?" And then it goes back to the present narrative. So that kind of showcases, in my opinion, like an awareness on Tarantino's part of like what he's known for, because he's known for going off into these almost like tangents of a story that are in the middle of another story. Like probably the most famous one is in Reservoir Dogs, where Tim Roth is working on this story that is part of his cover as an undercover policeman. And as he's telling the story to some friends in the club, he slowly is like, you're watching it unfold. But in this case, it doesn't go into a frame narrative at all. You're expecting this long, almost pointless sequence, and it's maybe 10 seconds of a hippie saying, "You want to buy an acid cigarette?" And yeah, those are just two of the really, really funny parts in this movie. This is a film that does its comedy well. And we will be right back after a word about our sponsor, Anchor. So, one thing I'm certain people will say about this movie, if they've not already said it, is that it drags a lot. This is a long movie, and the plot is not necessarily accommodating of that. It kind of wanders around. Doesn't really go anywhere. There's one part where you're literally just watching a person watch a movie, and that can be cool, but it can also be frustrating because you're sitting around just like waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, I was sitting there during the movie wondering if I was just too dumb to understand what was going on, but in reality it's just a bunch of scenes that don't really correlate at all with the overall plot.
Yeah, and this is, I'm going to be honest, I love this aspect of it. I like when Quentin Tarantino just kind of has random things that look cool or sound cool, argumentative conversations that are just about things he likes, you know. He likes Westerns, so people have long, pointless conversations about Westerns in this movie a lot. But I can understand that being a drag. Also, speaking of drags, and if you've seen this movie, you know what I'm talking about. The feet were a little bit much. I wasn't a fan of all... there's just so many shots of feet, and they look weird in this movie. Yeah, I guess it's his thing. He's got to do it right now for the meme or whatever, but there's a driving scene where this girl just like has her feet up on the windshield, and it's like it's distracting, honestly. But in general, I didn't feel gross or disgusted watching this movie like I have some of his films, like The Hateful Eight. There is violence, but it didn't feel as excessive.
Okay, I don't agree with that at all. He smashed that girl's head in repeatedly for like a solid... I had to close my eyes. There was like a sickening crunch of her skull every time.
Okay, all right. Let me rephrase. The end of this movie is very
violent. Wait a minute. And then that girl is on fire.
Yeah. Okay.
You see her burnt corpse floating.
Okay. Okay. You're... All right. Re-evaluation of the situation here. This movie lets you get to the end without feeling disgusted.
Okay. All right. I agree with that.
You can agree with that? Okay. The end is kind of like the climax to end all climaxes. It gets crazy and it's hilarious, very funny. But I think the end doesn't get to be this like explosion of chaos that it does without the plot being kind of slow and not really going anywhere.
And that brings me to the point that I think the brilliance of this movie is really hinged upon. A writing professor of mine once told me that the only good ending is the inevitable one. Essentially, this is saying that if a story's finale is not congruous with the other parts of it, then it isn't good. So by this metric, a film like The Sixth Sense, for example, is not good. And while this isn't true across the board, I think there's something to the concept that misleading the audience with red herring and other storytelling devices is not always for the best. And the brilliance of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is nothing in the story misleads us. Instead, we allow things outside the film to inform our perception of it and where we think the story is going. We take in the darkness and hopelessness of Quentin Tarantino's oeuvre and the violence of history, and we shape an idea that we think will be the end of the story. And then Tarantino takes that and just gracefully just flips it on its head, as if to say, relax, this is a fairy tale.
Listening to this episode of Industry Herb. Stay tuned for more hot takes and cultural commentary. This episode was written by Ned and Lainey Kuchmenda. Sound production was done by Lainey and Ned Kuchmenda. The producers were Ned and Lainey Kuchmenda. See you next time on Industry Herb.